Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. Welcome. So to start off today, we're going to play a little bit of a conversation I had earlier this week with Neil Young. He has a new album, Peace Trail. It's actually out today. And it's kind of a wild album. It's a mix of some really stripped down just guitar, bass, and drum stuff with a little bit of weird electronic voices and some other experimental stuff. It's interesting. And the conversation, talking to Neil Young is always a trip. There's definitely some tense moments in this interview. There's a couple awkward moments, and I'm just ready to let you guys hear it. So here's me and Neil Young just a couple days ago.
Hello, man.
Pretty good.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for taking time to do this, man.
Great.
So I love the spare sound of this record. I love the way the arrangements work. I love the songs. I was curious, since you were doing versions of these songs with Promise of the Real, how you chose to obviously get different musicians to do the recorded versions.
Well, I did the songs with the musicians on the record first.
Got it.
The record was made before I played the songs with Promise of the Real.
Got it. So we were hearing the cover version then, yeah.
Right. Hearing another view of it, just another view.
Got it. At the same time, all that said, I mean, you had been collaborating with Promise of the Real before that. So, I mean, how did you decide to do Countner and the bass player you had on there? How did you pick those musicians to record this album with?
Well, Paul Bushnell and Jimmy Keltner are friends of mine. Jimmy's a really old friend of mine. And they wanted to help me make a record of the songs that I had on my mind. And the boys were out playing. They had some of their own gigs.
Got it.
I had studio time booked, and I was ready to go. Made the decision based on the music.
Tell me about writing these songs. I know that you, one of the things that other songwriters admire you for, one of the many things really, is your spontaneity and your ability to write quickly and not second-guess yourself. I know that Paul McCartney is in awe of your ability to do that. And I think you said that you took that to an even further level, like really spontaneous with the writing. So how did that work for you on this record?
Well, it's just the way it is. I just do it that way. You know, I've written half of the songs before we started. I had, you know, at least, a glimmer of what they were going to be like. And so I would just get up in the morning and pick up my guitar. And whatever I did, that was it. I built a song right on that and just wrote about what was on my mind. And, you know, I've done a lot of records and made a lot of songs and played a lot of guitars. So it all felt good. I just trust myself, you know. I figure if I can't do it by now, why am I even bothering to try? I mean, I don't want to go in there and build something and contrive something and work on the vocal.
Right.
It's not the way I want to do it. So, and I don't make those kind of records, and it's obvious. So, although I'm not saying that I never will, I'm not saying I won't spend a lot of time in the studio like I just did on Earth. Earth was I was 4 months in the studio making that record. So I really enjoyed that because it was part of my re-entry into the studio world.
Mm.
Where I live now, I have a studio nearby, so I can just go down there and work in it when I feel like it, basically. It's a good studio and it's great people and a really good sound. So I feel free to do whatever I want to do, and I'm confident that I'm not going to, there's nothing can go wrong by trying it.
Yeah, it's Shangri-La, Rick Rubin Studio, is that where you stop by? Is that the...
Shangri-La, yeah, I've been hanging out there since 1975, so I feel comfortable there.
Apparently you ran into a rapper, Dram or D-R-A-M, and collaborated with him. That's been going around for a while. What happened with that? Is that real?
That was on Earth.
Got it. Okay.
There's a song called People Want to Hear About Love. It's on Earth. A Dram sings on that with me.
Got it. So you weren't working on a rap album then. That's what people were wondering if you were getting really experimental there.
Well, people really have, you know, they have the right to have any idea they want to have. That's great about America.
Speaking of America, I think all of us were taken by surprise. You and Darryl called him the surprise president, surprise president-elect. But what do you make of this turn of events of the election of Trump?
Oh, I don't know. What can you make of it? Who knows? Who knows? I wish him the absolute best. I think some of his goals are not goals that are my goals. I think there's a lot more people in America that don't want to do some of those things. But I think he has a refreshing viewpoint for the downtrodden, for the people who have suffered under politics as usual. And it's up to him to show if he can satisfy all of the hopes that he's created in these people and the things that he's said. I wish him absolutely the best with that. And on the other side of the coin, I hope he fails miserably with all of his bad ideas about deciding that some people can come in the country because of one religion and some people have to stay out because of another one. I think those ideas are antiques. And I think, although I have a great respect for antiques and I think that they should be, taken care of, I don't believe they should be used every day.
Terrorist suicide hang gliders, you obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, nothing's obvious, but I would imagine that was partly inspired by some of the fears that Trump and people like him were stoking on the campaign trail, correct?
Well, Trump has nothing to do with anything that directly.
Mm-hmm.
People who feel like that are they're there. And they have to be recognized for who they are and treated like, with some due of respect for their views. But that doesn't mean you have no one has to agree with them. And we'll fight them everywhere and anytime at every opportunity. I would imagine that this inauguration day, there's going to be a lot of action on the streets around the world, but most particularly in this country.
Yeah. Listen, a lot of people are very scared,
Well, I feel like there's a lot of ideas that I don't agree with.
Yeah.
But that I have a voice, and I know that almost 3 million more people voted for Hillary Clinton then voted for Donald Trump. Now, that doesn't mean that I would have voted for Hillary Clinton if I had a vote.
Right.
Canadian. It doesn't mean that. It just means that candidate A beat the hell out of candidate B. But because of the way the system is set up, candidate B won.
Right, of course.
And candidate B is one of the greatest players and dealers in the game. So he understood the value of certain states and certain things and their values, like on the Monopoly board, what you could do with those if you put together all of them. And he played a very smart game. So we have to respect that there's an intellect at work there that we may not totally understand. And I don't dismiss completely that something good could come of this on some levels. So,
That's fair enough.
I don't like any of that stuff, and I'll fight everything that that I don't agree with. I'll be vocal about it, and I'll stand with those who are against it too. I mean, like, a lot of environmental problems seem to be on the horizon with this rear view mirror view, and there's no there's things that are more important than a 3-month window of profit.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and, I think it's up to America and the Electoral College now to decide whether whether the candidate is up to the job.
Yeah.
And that's what they're supposed to do. So if everything works, then they'll make the right decision, and everything will be great. You figure it out.
This album betrays some mixed feelings about technology at best, and I thought that was some of the most interesting stuff on the record. I mean, you allude to this, but what do you think iPhones are doing to humanity, or just, you know, the idea that people are staring at their phones instead of interacting? You kind of reference them at one point.
Just the landscape. I prefer to talk to people. I like talking to people. I don't like holding a phone up to my ear. I'm on a speakerphone with you right now, where it's leaning up against a piece of wood, so you sound better. And so, you know, that's the way I like to do it. I abandoned email a while ago. Don't do that anymore. I use the internet. It's a great source of things. You know, finding out information, watching live streams of actions here and there around the country. Watching things happen that you never see on regular TV because their sponsorship is all corporate, and so corporate controls the news media. So everything you see on Fox or NBC or any of these, you know, whatever they are, I don't even, you know, everything you see there is, you know, it's slanted one way or the other. So seeing what the people do is interesting to me. I want to see what the people are doing. I want to see what's really happening without having some watered-down, made-up commentator telling me what they think I should know.
Yeah.
I just like to watch what's really happening. And there's a lot of great activism going on out there. There's drone channels. There's people doing live streams. And then there's independent views of the world happening.
On My Pledge, the character on My Pledge says talks about being lost in this generation, left me behind, it seems. Obviously, that's a character, but is that ever a way that you feel? Does it reflect any part of your own feelings?
I'm a spectator. I'm not in that new generation. I'm watching what's happening. I'm kind of trying to get a grip on it. Yeah, I look at it. What if I just dropped in here from outer space? What would I think? Remember hula hoops? Everybody had a hula hoop. I don't know if you remember that. This was in the 50s. Of course you don't. But everybody had hula hoops. It was like a craze.
Right.
And they were all. Everybody was doing this. For months, you'd see hula hoops everywhere. And it kind of reminds me of that with phones.
Yeah.
Walking around, everybody's got their device, they're doing this and that. Can you imagine that that's going to last really a long time? I don't see it. I think something's going to replace that.
Well, you know, maybe something, people probably start jamming something straight into their eyeballs or something, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, or use their eyeballs.
That would be a preferable, yes. That might be too much to ask, Neil.
We got pretty good equipment on board already. I don't need all that shit. I've got people with that shit everywhere around me that could show it to me at the drop of a hat. So there's so much of it out there, I don't need to have it.
What was your takeaway from playing at Desert Trip? What did you think of the whole thing, and especially playing with Paul, which you seemed to really enjoy?
It was fun. The whole thing was fun. It was great to be there. It was an experience. You know, we tried to treat it like any regular gig because it really was.
Yeah.
We went to Pomona and played two nights in a theater in Pomona in the middle of the week between those two desert gigs. You know, it was good. We just did what we always do.
Mm.
We didn't try to do a greatest hits program or something like that. We did four or five new tunes. We just, it's just who we are. That's what we're doing. If they wanted us, they got us.
Do you think whatever your next gigs are, will you be back with Promise of the Real? Have you thought about that?
I hope so. But it's hard to see that far into the future. I'm actually just focusing now on recordings for a while.
Oh, interesting. Well, I was going to ask you because it at one point it seemed like you were going to be touring in the early part of next year, and then it looks like you've pulled back from that. Is that to focus on the studio? Is that the idea?
I got a lot of things going on right now. I'm writing. I've got a series on a television series that I'm working on. That's about my adventures of my electric car crossing North America, which is kind of interesting.
Oh yeah.
And we're working on that. As a matter of fact, that's what I'm doing later today here. I'm in Colorado, and we're doing some reviewing. I got a lot to do without touring, and I toured a lot. The last 4 or 5 years, I really toured a lot, and I just got to a point where I thought I'd take a break and focus on things that will endure, like making a studio record, and I enjoy doing that right now. I got a good place to do it. I got a great band. I got Promise of the Real, and we've already started on making the record. So.
Ah, okay. So that you're literally already recording your next record.
Halfway finished.
Holy shit! And with Promise of the Real, that's very exciting. Cool.
Yeah.
Is the idea to put that out fast to really speed to go on, do it the old fashioned way?
There's no idea.
Okay.
There's no idea. When the record is finished, we're going to put it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Best to put it out or the worst time to put it out, but that's when it's coming out.
I mean, that's, listen, in the 60s, people didn't wait as long between records. That's a modern idea that people should wait a long time between records,
Yeah, well, I don't know when all that happened.
I didn't
have time. I didn't have time to wait that long.
You're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. That was me and Neil Young chatting. We're going to have a little bit more of that in a bit. But first, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
We've been playing some of my very recent conversation with Neil Young, and we're about to play some more. My favorite parts are the long pauses before each question. When I ask a question, and then before the answer, there's like a good 5-second pause. It's if you can imagine conducting the interview, there's something really panic-inducing about that pause. But anyway, in this next part, I start out by asking Neil about the future of Pono, which is his high-definition music device and service. Actually, more of it's been a download store. It sounds like it's about to shift direction. So here's the rest of my interview with Neil Young.
What is the future of Pono in your mind?
It's a good future. We're setting up right now our partnerships for a Pono high-res streaming service.
Oh, wow.
And when we get our streaming service up, we're going to reemerge as a streaming service and a high-res download offer. That's what we do. That's our service. We provide the best that's available, full resolution music, great sounding music, and we're pushing towards getting a presence in phones and being able to be part of large partnerships that will enable us to share the sound of high res and have people experience the sound of high res in music like they have in television.
to be clear, you want to, it's going to be streaming not just Tidal, which is just the CD quality 44. You mean true high res, full Pono level streaming is the idea.
That if the track is available that way, we will be able to stream it that way. Fit perfect.
Well, I'm very excited about that. I mean, there's obviously some you'd have to figure out. You'd have to do lossless compression, right, to get the stuff.
No, we're not doing lossless compression.
Ah, okay. So you just.
But we're doing another technology, and we have a partnership that we're setting up right now with a company from Singapore, that will enable us to do this, so we want to maintain our quality level when we go to streaming, and I think we can. And if you have the bandwidth, you can get the full frequency, the full everything. If you don't have the bandwidth, your app will show you what you're missing. You may have gone from 192 down to 48, or from you might have even less than half of the resolution that you could have, but you'll be able to with our service, you'll be able to move around, and there won't be any break in the music, but the resolution of the sound will change, and you'll be able to tell what happens when you look at your screen. And that will educate people as to the difference between high resolution music and regular streaming level music, which would be the bottom level for our streaming service if there was very weak signal. That's all we could do, but we'll be sending it all out there and getting in under ideal circumstances, we'll get bit perfect playback.
That's exciting.
We've done tests with it. We've taken the analog. We've taken recordings of the stream, and recordings of our original Pono in 192. The highest resolution that we sell, and we've compared them and they phased each other out and disappeared. That means there's no difference between the two of them.
Wow.
And that's the physical proof of it, is if they disappear.
Right, it's the same, yeah.
It's the same. That means they phased out. Now, you can't do that with lossless compression because there's so much different between, and if you try to do it with anything else, of course, it just shows up that there's so much crap in the MP3 that has nothing to do with music. It's just white noise and filler and everything, and that that's the lowest level, and that's where we are right now. So I would really like to change that, but I love our concept of streaming because we can present everything at the highest resolution we can get it at. And sometimes that'll be full resolution all the way up to 192.24. Sometimes it'll be CD. That's up to the record companies and the artists,
what
they provide us with. I mean, they're free to make whatever quality they want. their product.
The line on Show Me that has gotten attention in concert, and people asked you about when the women of the world are free to stand up for themselves. Have you had a feminist awakening recently, Neil? Is this something that you've given a little more thought to recently?
Well, I'm always in touch with my feminine side. I've always tried to maintain that.
Well, that's one thing, but also feminism and thinking about women's rights and that. How about on that front? Is that something you've thought more about recently?
Well, I never even thought much about it when I wrote the song. It just came to mind. I just said I wrote a couple of verses about Standing Rock, and then I had another verse, and I wasn't anywhere near finished. And so I just wrote it down, when the women of the world are free to stand up for themselves and the promises made, stop gathering dust on the shelves, show me.
Another moment about technology on the record is Powering On, which is it's creepy, that song. It freaked me out.
Hey, man, it sounds like Jimmy Rogers, that song. It's an old country song. At the beginning, it's like, wow, Neil's really gone back to the 50s.
I think that's why I was taken aback. I nearly jumped out of my seat.
A new robot.
So what's the thinking there? Is it just about the creepiness of this roboticized technologically dominated future? Is that the idea there?
Well, you know, I kind of get sick when I think about logging on.
Yeah.
There's something repulsive about it. I don't feel good about it anymore.
Hmm.
I lived that way for a while, and I really, I couldn't figure out why I was basically unsatisfied and unhappy. And I realized, hey, I'm spending a lot of time sitting here doing this.
Yeah.
I'm missing, you know, grass is growing, you know. Breeze are blowing in the wind. The sky is changing. People are talking to me. Well, look at that person. All of those things. I miss that. You know, I miss the animals. I miss everything real. So I realized that, you know, virtually, I was just kind of living without living.
Yeah.
And it just didn't make any sense. It's not satisfying. So I think what I'm getting at, there's a certain sickness to it in the end. It's kind of nauseating, although it's funny. So all I did was take things that are already there.
Yeah.
I used Samsung phone. I used voices from my Apple computer. I wrote the lyrics into the computer, and then Jimmy and I worked out the timing of the way the lyrics fall and where they fall on the beat. And then we just hit the button, and it did it. You know, we're using technology to tell a story of how technology is sometimes not serving us.
Yeah.
Technology is supposed to serve the people. That was the goal of technology. That's the goal of this whole thing. And I don't like this surveillance. I don't like the cloud. I don't like any of this. I don't like everybody to know where I am all the time. I don't like the idea that this phone call is being listened to in Utah.
Yeah.
I don't like, or could be, you know. God forbid, if we got a crazy president decided to deport me because I was too loud.
Yeah.
Who the hell knows what's going on? I don't know. So I figure we just got to make a statement of some kind. You can never get out of the eye.
Yeah.
The eye is watching you all the time anyway.
Yeah.
Every time I tried to get a phone that wasn't connected to the internet, you can't.
Yeah.
And if you're connected to the internet, every time you make a call, it's recorded.
Yeah, I don't even like thinking about it, to be honest, but yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we're at. So
yeah.
I'm going, this isn't all as great as, hey, you know, tell me where you are, and I'll tell you what stores are near you.
What thought have you given to the future of Crazy Horse? I know those guys would like to do at least one more tour with you.
Crazy Horse has a huge future. Listen, the future is gigantic. No one knows the limits of the future.
Okay.
So I don't know how to answer that. I think we're all in the same future. Me, Crazy Horse, Promise of the Real, Jimmy Keltner, Paul Bushnell, every other band in the world, and everybody else. We're all in it.
To make it less abstract and specific, I mean, is Billy up to playing? Have you talked to him?
Fine. He's great.
That's great to hear, actually. Seriously.
Yeah, no, Billy's in great shape. He's fine.
That's great.
No, we just, you know, we have a cycle.
Yeah.
Crazy Horse has a cycle. If you look at Crazy Horse's history and when Crazy Horse played and when they didn't play, you can see that we're still in the pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. That is I see it as like almost like you're on a revolving, and you just have to revolve back to them, I guess. In my mind, at least, that, you know, it just has to get there.
Well, however you want to track it.
Okay. And I mean, the same. Is CSNY? Do you think there's a big anniversary coming up? Could you ever see that happening again?
Oh yeah, there's a huge anniversary coming up. Huge. It's terrific.
Yeah. So
I love it.
is that something you could imagine happening again, playing with those guys?
Anything is possible. I wouldn't close the door on anything, literally.
That's yeah. And what, how would you sum up this thing? You know, how would you sum up this time of your life and career? You really seem optimistic. You seem energetic. I mean, where's your head at? How do you see this time of your life?
I see a lot of love.
Yeah. And which means
what you saw.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you just described, that's the result of love. That's the result of having a group of people around you that love you and support you and make you feel good about yourself and help to do things and go by your side, talk about things, you know, work with you, try to make things happen, allow you to help them do things, all of those things. It's all love. It's a great thing. The more love, the better.
It doesn't seem like retirement is something that is even a word that's in your vocabulary.
Well, we were just talking about it a few minutes ago. We really were.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it takes many forms.
Yeah, yeah, right. So the nice thing is you do so many different things musically, and not that you can do this thing like you're not, maybe you're going to take some time off from the road and do different stuff, maybe 2000. Do you think that the entire year of 2017 you might be off the road? Is it going to go that far?
Well, I've heard that's possible.
Hmm.
That might happen because, you know, I have a lot of things to do. But I wouldn't predict anything because, you know, it's like sand, you know, sifting sands. You really can't tell what's going to happen. Fortune tellers are going to be, as soon as they're discovered, they're going to be, you know, they'll be out of work. Last question, please, Brian.
Yeah, no. I mean, you met with Trump, you know, rich guy trying to get, I guess it's about Pono, a while back. Did anything in that meeting contribute to your whatever optimism you might have about him?
Well, you know, he's come to a lot of my shows over the years.
Yeah, he's a fan, no doubt.
I found that to be nice to see him out there grooving. You know, I could see him in the audience having a good time like everybody else. You know, I didn't know some of the views that he has, but he's a human being. He's got his way of looking at things. And, what was the question again? You can have that question again.
Okay. No, I mean, because you... I
lost the Golden Tower. I got caught my foot on the escalator or something. I don't know what happened.
No, I was just asking about... Because you did meet with him, I think, about maybe investing in Pono or something like that.
Oh, yeah. We're going to make music great again. I said, Don, let's make music great again. No, this was about a year ago.
Yeah.
Half ago, I don't know, something like that. Yeah, maybe it was 3 years ago, I don't know. Longer, yeah, I guess it was about 2 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, if only you could have distracted him a little more. Yeah.
No idea, obviously, I can't remember it. So, but it was a while ago. Pono was just getting started, and we needed some money, and I thought that it would be, you know, I looked at him, and now here's a guy who cares about his legacy. Maybe he'd want to be someone who was responsible for restoring the art of recorded sound.
Right.
No, he's a great he has a great reputation or voice, so to say. You know, in his own business, he's very unique. He does things differently. He does a lot of things that people say are shaky. You know, I don't know. I haven't researched into everything he's done, but you know, there's all kinds of people who are fascinated with him. You can tell he's a fascinating individual. Everybody is writing about him all the time.
Yeah.
The press couldn't get enough of him during the campaign. You know, so I'm just like them. I said, man, maybe this guy can help us. Maybe this guy will help Pono make music great again.
Well, it's too bad you couldn't have gotten him. Yeah.
I'm not suing him or anything. I won't sue Don Trump. I won't sue him for taking that.
All right. Well, Neil, I will let you go. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.
All right, have a good one.
All right.
You just heard me chatting with Neil Young for a bit, and now I have with me, not Neil Young, but Andy Green from Rolling Stone. Hello, Andy Green.
And hi there, Brian. How you doing?
I'm good. So, Neil, I mean, the interesting thing is he didn't record this new album with his awesome backing band, which is who? Tell me about the backing band.
Which is Promise of the Real, which is Lucas Nelson and like Micah Nelson, the sons of Willie Nelson, and their band. And he met them, it was just randomly, at Farm Aid 3 years ago. And they came out, they played on Rocking in the Free World, and that was enough to become his band for the next 3 years.
Well, the funny thing is, at the office, the day after that happened, yeah. We all were like, watch this, they're going to become his new touring band, because we sort of know about how Will's MO works.
Yeah, and their timing was very fortunate in that he had no band at that moment, that CSNY was done, Crazy Horse was on a break because of Billy Talbot's stroke, Ben Keith had passed away, he had no band. So he found this band that's actually great. Yeah. And it was the start of a very good period for him.
My impression, he says that he didn't use Promise the Real on this new album because they weren't available. It may be that that's a polite fiction and actually he just wanted this more spare sound that he has on here.
Yeah, I think that with this band, it's real studio pros. And Promise the Real are awesome, but they're not quite as slick as these guys.
And sometimes, yeah, and obviously Neil has distinguished between the sort of rough road band of a Crazy Horse and the kind of studio guys he might use on a Harvest. You know, he has in his mind, and I think that's one of the things that has made Neil a great maker of records is that he understands who you use for different kinds of music. He doesn't just force Crazy Horse to try to do the acoustic record. You know.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And this is Neil back in his real mellow mode. Which is nice to hear again.
Sort of, it's not. Yeah, it's.
I mean, it's not like Harvest mellow, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how mellow it is, Andy. I think it's kind of. I think it's mellow-ish, but there's a lot of electric guitar. It's certainly not. It's somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But and with some deeply odd moments as well. As I told Neil, I mean, there's one track that I listened to that, the final track that has all these electronic voices on it, and it. I was kind of like I was listening to it at nighttime, kind of. Before I went to sleep, and I was getting pretty sleepy, and then these insane electronic voices like knock me out of my seat. So be careful listening to this record. What did you make of Neil's answer about Crazy Horse, which is that he said for those who hadn't been listening, he said that first he had a sort of sarcastic answer about the future's unlimited for every band on earth,
right?
And then when I made him get specific, and it sounded like he thinks there's plenty of time to play with Crazy Horse.
Yeah, I sort of worry about that. I'm a Crazy Horse partisan.
Yeah.
They're my favorite band that he's ever worked with. It's incredible. All three guys are still around and fine. But he says there's time. They're in a cycle. These are men in their early 70s now.
Playing some of the most ferocious, physical.
And he was saying 15 years ago he wasn't sure about Crazy Horse in the future because of his hearing and the energy it takes. Now that he's 71... I, as a Crazy Horse fan, I'm a little worried that by the time that he comes back to wanting them, he'll be too old for it.
Right. It seems like he's refusing to do that math, which is kind of admirable in a way.
It's admirable, but lots of other people, if you talk to Tom Petty or Springsteen, they're very aware of the limitations of their age and trying to get things done when they can.
Right. They end up sort of pushing off the acoustic thing because they figure, hey, man, I can do the acoustic thing anytime, but maybe I should rock out now while I'm, you know, on my feet.
Yeah, so I'm definitely hoping that he goes back to the Horse in like a year or so and does one more glorious tour.
And I think for the last part of this show, we're going to talk about Greg Lake, who just passed away and was a really key figure in prog rock. And I think we've said that one of the credits that he doesn't get credit for enough is being on the amazing first King Crimson record, right? And that's his voice on 21st Century Schizoid Man, which, by the way, sounds so badass. It's such a cool song. It's the song that, of course, Kanye sampled for Power.
Right, and this album is basically the big bang of prog rock.
Yeah.
It gave birth to the 70s in so many ways.
Where would disco
to 70s prog, I should say, which was all birthed out of this. If you talk to the guys in Yes or in Genesis, they pointed this as the one that just changed their whole mindset about music.
Right.
And he was a key part of it. And he sang every song. And because the band dissolved so quickly and Fripp continued, and Robert Fripp, their guitarist, he carried on, he kept changing members, sort of like Lake's role in it is sort of forgotten.
Yeah, it's weird because
because he's part of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, there's a certain taint upon him.
And poor Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. I mean, I spoke to Greg, and even he is not a big fan of some of the group's work. They came to embody everything bad about 70s stadium rock and prog rock.
Wait, and your argument is that early ELP is good, right?
It's much better than latter day stuff, but then those first few albums are very strong, I would argue. It's just it got so bombastic, and like every punk band would just cite them as the reason that they became a punk band, and every rock documentary would just make fun of them, and that they were just like attacked by everybody. But Greg, if you hear Lucky Man, it's a beautiful song. I mean,
and the funny thing is when you talk to him, he himself is not pretentious, is not pompous.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, I talked to him 3 years ago. I didn't know what to expect. But from the minute he got on the phone, he was cracking me up. He was super self-aware. He was self-deprecating. He sort of understood his role in history and the perception of him and was just laughing about it. He was a really great guy.
Well, that's makes things so much easier when you interview someone, is if they're self-aware, if
yes.
they understand their place and things and don't have a wildly different idea of who they are than what the world thinks.
Right.
Of,
and know? I've rarely talked to artists who tell me about their own albums they hate, but he was saying Works Volume 1 was horrible, then after that it was a disaster and we got up our own asses and we had three different orchestras on this tour and our own doctor and we looked like turkeys on stage. I mean, he was just willing to talk about all of it, because if you see footage of them in like 1978 playing a stadium, they look ridiculous. And like Keith Emerson, who died a few months ago, and you know, he got committed suicide, it was really awful, he was sick.
Yeah.
But if you look at the keyboard he's playing a stack of like seven all lined up. I mean, and he's wearing some crazy robe or something. I mean, it's like he's like a wizard or something.
Yeah.
But Greg was so talented that when the Who needed a bass player in 04, they brought him in.
Yeah, and he's not even primarily a bass player.
No. So. And he was great. He was in Ringo's All-Star Band for years. He would sing in the court of the Crimson King. He would sing Lucky Man. He would play guitar on the Yellow Submarine. I mean, he was willing to do whatever. And what really haunted him, what he talked about to me, what he was upset about, was that ELP just didn't tour. They broke up in 79. They reformed briefly with a different drummer in the mid-80s, Powell. So they were ELP, but with a different P.
Do you think that was a requirement for that member?
They swear that they didn't even realize until after Cozy Powell's and Awesome Number was hired that they're still ELP. But it was a really, it was like wanted.
Yeah.
A like prog rock drummer that is fantastic, but his last name starts with P. and they got one. Then they reformed briefly in the 90s. They broke up in 98, and Greg wanted to keep doing shows, but they refused. They just didn't like each other. So he was sort of cast aside from the oldies world for a very long time. He couldn't really be Greg Lake if he wasn't playing with Keith and Carl, and he wanted King Crimson to do something. He thought that the first lineup, they should reunite and play the first album.
Yeah, that would have been so cool.
It would have been incredible, but Robert Fripp has no interest in it. And strangely enough, a few months ago, he started playing in the court of the Crimson King at his concerts, which he didn't touch it in like 45 years or something.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing. But not with Lake, with his current lineup of the band.
It's interesting. I mean, what would you tell someone who isn't super familiar with Greg Lake? What would you tell them to listen to get a good idea and to find something that they might actually like despite the preconceptions?
Well, I think the first King Crimson record, I think anybody can like that. I mean,
yeah, it's sort of the hipster prog record, let's face it. Yeah.
It is, and you can hear, and it's very heavy. There's like Cream type like guitar and bass on it. It's really aggressive. And the first couple records by ELP.
Uh-huh. What makes them good and the later stuff not?
The songs were shorter. It was less bombastic. They, you know, I think prog in like 72 is very different than prog in like 78.
Yeah.
It got way over the top. And, you know, if a song is like 30 minutes long, it's often not going to be great, with a few big exceptions. But when they started out, they were more of an art band, and it was really cool little songs.
There's a decent chance that Yes might get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah.
Is there ever a chance that Emerson, Lake, and Palmer will get into the Rock and
Roll
Hall of Fame?
Well, King Crimson aren't in the Hall of Fame.
Well, that's, yeah.
And if they'd gotten in before he died, they could have reunited They haven't played since 1969.
Yeah.
If they could have had the original King Crimson play, it would have been great. And the Hall of Fame, they're just, they've been very slow with prog bands, let's put it that way.
But it's starting. Genesis, right. Rush,
but they brought,
maybe Yes.
Yeah. And all three of those were groups that had pop hits in the 80s.
Right.
And like King Crimson, as awesome as they are, they had no new wave period. They had no Owner of a Lonely Heart type period. So
I'm laughing because I'm trying to imagine that. I'm trying to imagine Fripp trying to write a pop hit.
It sounds crazy, but if you look at the very early 80s, you had Asia's Heat of the Moment. You had Yes, they had Owner of a Lonely Heart. Yeah. You had Genesis with all these pop hits. So, yeah, and you had Rush with Tom Sawyer and stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, King Crimson missed out. But I noticed you skipped over. So Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, you think, will never be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
If they're still around, if they're still doing Hall of Fame in, like, 30 years maybe, it's just the critics hate them.
Yeah. Yeah, they symbolize. I mean, like you said, in every documentary, when they have to explain why punk is coming, be like, rock had grown pompous. And then they show them in, like, 40-foot capes and, like, you know.
Right.
Yeah. They weren't the ones who had the ice skating tour, though.
That was Rick Wakeman. That was King Arthur on Ice in 1975. He left Yes to do King Arthur on Ice.
I feel that King Arthur on Ice is probably the greatest moment of rock and roll history.
You should go onto YouTube and watch this stuff. It is hysterical.
We recommend, yes, that is the, and RIP Greg Lake, but also go and watch King Arthur on Ice in tribute to the general genre of prog.
Yes.
Anyway, so this has been Rolling Stone Music Now. We'll be back next Friday at 1 p.m. In the meantime, please go to rollingstone.com/podcasts and download all of our episodes, or do it wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for being here.